New findings from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention highlight that many adults are not getting the recommended vaccines. Joining me today is Dr. William Schaffner from Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville. And doctor, you tell us over and over that the best way to protect yourself from the flu virus is to get vaccinated. Are we complying?
Well, we're complying, but we can always do better. We still have a way to go. You know, Dan, the CDC now recommends that everyone older than 6 months of age, that's all of us listening, should be vaccinated against influenza each and every year. So let's all make a resolution. Come next fall, let's all go out and get vaccinated. This is not only to prevent illness in ourselves, but in those around us. We don't want to spread influenza to members of our family or to those with whom we work. So be a good citizen. Remain healthy, and don't spread that virus.
Now, doctor, you said, make a resolution for next fall. If a person has not been vaccinated so far this year, are we too late for that to protect ourselves?
We're getting kind of late, but we still recommend vaccination because if you haven't been sick, flu will continue to smolder in Tennessee and around the country for another month or so. So in order to protect yourself against that, go ahead and get vaccinated, but please don't linger, because for optimal protection, it takes about 10 days to 2 weeks for that protection to build up in your body.
Doctor, oftentimes I know parents think first, and as they should, of their kids and make sure our kids are immunized, but sometimes adults kind of maybe wait or decide it's something that they just don't need to do, and that's just not the truth, is it?
It's not the truth. Vaccines are not just for kids. We have a whole array of vaccines that are important for adults also, and frankly, most of us are not as aware of that as we might be, and if the doctor mentions it, you kind of blow it off and say, well, I'll think about it next time. So there are a series of those. So in addition to influenza, let me mention the shingles vaccine. Eligible, everybody 60 and older should be getting that vaccine against this painful recrudescence of the chickenpox virus that can really be a very painful life-altering illness. Another vaccine to consider is one called pneumococcal vaccine, big fancy name. Some people call it the pneumonia vaccine because it's designed to do just that, prevent the most serious complication of influenza. Everyone 65 and older should be getting that, and those younger than 65 who have underlying illnesses, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, asthma, people who are immunocompromised, and the like. So that's still a substantial number of folks. The CDC just released a report. They've done an assessment, and they've discovered that only about, for example, 20% of people who are younger adults with those underlying illnesses have received that vaccine. And isn't that sad? Because those folks with those underlying illnesses are really prone to developing pneumonia. Let's try to prevent that by getting the vaccine.
Speaking today with Dr. William Schaffner at Vanderbilt University Medical Center about getting vaccinated for adults, and slightly off topic here, doctor, but maybe not so much. I know also the stomach virus, you call it the norovirus, that's been hitting this area pretty heavily this year. And why is that so, doctor?
Well, it's not called, this is a little gross, winter vomiting disease for nothing. It likes the cooler time of the year. It is spread very readily, and we have a new variant norovirus that's out there. It'll affect both the top and the bottom of your intestinal tract for several days. The real issue there is dehydration for the very young and particularly those who are older and frail, so you've got to watch that. Wash your hands is the best preventive. We're working on a norovirus vaccine, but we're not quite there yet.
Doctor, let's talk a little bit more about prevention. Hopefully you don't have the flu, and you mentioned obviously washing your hands, one of the most important ways to prevent getting sick. Any other tips in that area to help us keep healthy this winter?
Well, sure. Hand hygiene is very important. Washing your hands with soap and water, but using those hand sanitizers frequently is important. Try to avoid people who are coughing and sneezing. That's easier said than done. You know, some people who are really frail and have serious underlying illnesses might think that this is the time to rent a movie rather than going to a movie. Avoiding crowds can be of some assistance. And then, of course, if you happen to get sick, please stay at home. Don't spread it to your friends.
Also, Doctor, I'd imagine, too, if you do find yourself that you have the flu, time to visit your doctor.
It would be, and often the doctors will recommend that you call in so that you don't go to the waiting room and spread it to people. And once again, the emphasis is on folks who have underlying illnesses. Your doctor, if notified promptly, can prescribe an antiviral medication that can make the illness shorter and you're less apt to get the complications.
Doctor, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but talk more about, I understand some adults are at higher risk for serious disease complications than others.
Yeah, particularly people who are older, their immune system becomes more frail, just as they become physically more frail, so they're more likely to get a number of illnesses. And therefore, we recommend pneumococcal vaccine for everybody age 65 and older. And of course, I've said influenza vaccine for everyone also. And if you have any of those underlying illnesses I've mentioned, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, for example, those are people who should be particularly concerned and ask their doctors about vaccines. You know, we can all go to cdc.gov/vaccines and get a lot of information. There's actually an adult vaccine quiz you can take. Answer a few questions and find out if you're eligible for which vaccines.
Dr. Bill Schaffner with Vanderbilt University Medical Center talking about vaccinations for adults. And earlier in the interview, Doctor, you mentioned that fall is the probably the perfect time to get a flu shot, and maybe we're at this point we might be running a little bit late. Why so in the fall versus maybe around the holidays?
Well, we start vaccinating in the fall, Dan, because we have many people to vaccinate, and if you get vaccinated then, your protection will indeed carry over throughout the winter season. Influenza came a little bit early this year, but traditionally, flu is most evident in January and February. But if you get vaccinated in September, your protection will indeed carry over throughout the season.
Finally, Doctor, we talked about kids and the flu, and obviously schools are a place where kids tend to pick up those type of diseases. What do parents need to do to help protect their children from those flu diseases while they're in school?
Well, the most important thing is that the parents should take their children to their family doctor or pediatrician and get them vaccinated. Once again, all children should be vaccinated annually against influenza. This will come as a bit of a surprise to parents. Another group of people that we emphasize that should get vaccinated against influenza are women who are pregnant.
Right.
Very, very important. Women who are pregnant are subject to complication rates of influenza comparable to those of folks older than 65. That comes as a big surprise. And if you vaccinate the pregnant woman, you not only protect the woman, but some of that protection goes through the placenta and protects the baby after it's born during those months when it's too young to be vaccinated itself. So, as my obstetrician colleague says, two for the price of one. Protect the pregnant woman and that newborn baby.
And back to the kids real quick before we wrap it up. Some of the symptoms may be obvious, but what do parents need to look for to know that maybe their child is getting the flu?
Well, the flu will make you just lethargic, sick. Fever will come up. In children, it's a much more total body infection. They don't cough quite as much. Some of them do, some of them don't. They can actually also have some abdominal pain with their fever. So call your pediatrician because they can provide an antiviral that can shorten the duration of that illness.
And you mentioned a website earlier. Give that to us again, if you would.
A pleasure. It's cdc.gov/vaccine.
Exposure to radon is a risk for homes, businesses, and schools across Tennessee. Here today to talk about radon awareness is Doug Taylor from the Nashville-based company AirTest LLC. To start, Doug, tell us a little bit about your company.
What AirTest does is that we're a full-service environmental company, but our main focus is radon mitigation testing as well as mold remediation and testing. A lot of indoor air quality issues that affect many people. And that's our main concentration, but we can do many other aspects of environmental work as well.
Doug, it seems like over the last couple of years, we've been hearing more and more about radon. Is that true, and why is that?
Well, we've always had radon issues, and at various points, EPA has funding to advertise it more, but the reality is that everyone should be aware that they have the possibility of having elevated concentrations of radon in their home or business. Businesses are also affected because there's folks that are in there for very long periods of time, say an office building. You may be at your office more than you are at home, and we should also look at those as well.
We've heard all about radon, but maybe some people don't really even know what it is. What is radon?
Well, radon is as uranium decays in the rock and soil, one of the byproducts is radon gas. And radon gas has a half-life of 3.8 days. So that gives us the ability to move that gas through the soil, and then, of course, a certain percentage of that will turn back into a particle, which is also a radioactive particle. So that's what causes the problem. Is that we have the ability to let that get into our house in the gas form.
And how do we come to a point where we know that either our office or our home might be at risk for radon?
The only way to know is testing. Radon gas is colorless. It has no odor, has no taste. And you could walk into a home that has very elevated radon levels and one that has zero radon levels, and you would not know the difference. And the only way to be able to tell if you have an issue is testing.
And talk about, too, are there like physical symptoms that you may incur if you have high levels of radon in your home? And I'll also understand that high levels could actually be fatal. Is that correct?
Yeah, the real issue is lung cancer that radon can cause. And EPA estimates about 20,000 people a year die of lung cancer because of radon exposure, not because of cigarette smoking. And we see this quite often. At least several times a month, we'll be in a home that the occupant, normally the housewife that's lived in this home for several years, gets lung cancer. Their oncologist asks them to test their house, and sure enough, they have high radon. Whether that's the real cause or not, we don't know, but it's one of those issues that we can at least eliminate that exposure from our lives if we just do testing and the proper repairs.
Doug, I understand that certain areas of the country may present greater radon risks than others. Is that correct? And talk about that.
Yeah, the real issue is where the uranium is in the soil and rock. Middle Tennessee has almost mineable quantities of uranium, which makes us have very high levels in this area. Coupled with, we have geology called karst, which allows that soil gas to come through the soil a little more readily, which makes it even worse. So if you look at, EPA actually has radon maps that show where areas are that are more elevated than others. And we are definitely in what they show as a red area or high area.
And Doug, you mentioned, the best way to find out if you have radon in your home is to get one of these radon tests. Next, would you maybe talk more about the tests, what that test is all about, and how that all works?
There are several different methodologies for testing. You can pick up a test kit at like a big box store like Home Depot or Lowe's. Normally those are about $30 or so. They're very easy to set. It's a charcoal canister. and those set for a maximum of 4 days in your home. And you just basically open the canister, let it sit out. It gives you the criteria for setting that, you know, as far as how far away from the doors, how far from the windows, and so forth. Send that to the lab, and they'll tell you what your number is. We also, as far as our company, AirTest, we use continuous monitors, and what those do is take hourly readings. So we can see those cycles of radon concentrations go up and down as the day progresses, and that gives us a little better idea of what's happening in a home when we put a remediation system in.
Doug, it seems like maybe the next obvious question is, once you've done this test, and if you find levels of radon in your home, how do we get rid of radon in our homes?
There's a couple of different methodologies, depending on whether you live, have a home that has a slab, a basement, or a crawl space. And I might note that any of those homes can have radon issues. You know, many times people will tell us, well, my house has a slab, so I don't have to be concerned with radon, or I have a crawl space and I don't need to be concerned. The reality is we put just as many mitigation systems in crawl space, slab, and basement homes as, you know, as any. So they all are, you know, have the possibility of having elevated numbers. For a slab or a basement, what we do is we core one or several holes into the floor, and we basically are trying to make a suction underneath that concrete floor. We connect that to a manifold system and to a mitigation fan, which pulls a little bit of air and a little bit of suction, and it's exhausted outside. And what we're trying to do is pull a negative air pressure underneath the slab. So the gas will travel to the path of least resistance, which will be that little bit of negative pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we go ahead and get rid of the soil gas. It's not just the radon gas, but it's all the soil gas that comes up. And we can at least get it to one point and exhaust it out. And that keeps it from coming into the home. A crawl space home, we actually use a radon barrier that we seal to all the walls and the piers underneath the home in the crawl space, and we put our manifold system under that. So we're basically making a negative pressure underneath that radon barrier. It's actually just a vapor barrier or a plastic barrier like many homes already have, but we're making that negative pressure underneath that so we can exhaust the soil gas out before it comes into the home.
Speaking with Doug Taylor from AirTest LLC, a Nashville-based company, and talking about radon and radon awareness.